Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This podcast is sponsored by Talkspace. You know when you're really stressed or not feeling so great about your life or about yourself? Talking to someone who understands can really help. But who is that person? How do you find them? Where do you even start? Talkspace. Talkspace makes it easy to get the support you need. With Talkspace, you can go online, answer a few questions about your preferences, and be matched with a therapist. And because you'll meet your therapist online, you don't have to take time off work or arrange childcare. You'll meet on your schedule, wherever you feel most at ease. If you're depressed, stressed, struggling with a relationship, or if you want some counseling for you and your partner, or just need a little extra one-on-one support, Talkspace is here for you. Plus, Talkspace works with most major insurers, and most insured members have a $0 copay. No insurance? No problem. Now, get $80 off of your first month with promo code SPACE80 when you go to Talkspace.com. Match with a licensed therapist today at Talkspace.com. Save $80 with code SPACE80 at Talkspace.com.
All right, today on Lulz, we are talking about the end of Rainmakers. If there's anyone who knows a thing or two about sports NFTs, it's the two guys who still collectively own a Nikola Jokic Cosmic on Top Shot. So we'll talk about what happened there. And then in the second half of the show, we're going to have an interview. Dean Sisson is swinging by. He is one of the co-founders of a new sports betting operation called the Profit Exchange. So excited to kind of hear from him about what he's been building. They have some kind of novel ideas that we wanted to pick his brain about. So that is what we got on tap for Lulz today. Let's do it.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What? Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS gods pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
Brian, did you own a single DraftKings NFT?
Mm-hmm. I had a couple other NFTs and a couple Rainmakers.
Yeah. Yeah, we had, who did we have? Didn't we have someone on the show early on who was getting into Rainmakers to talk about it? I mean, I know there were some.
I think it was Petty, wasn't it?
It was Petty. Yeah, he was like, he was pretty deep in those streets. You know what? Petty is always in our chat asking for drama. Here's the drama, Petty. You led all of these, you know, unwitting participants into the Rainmaker slaughter. Where are you when it's time to be held accountable?
How dare you? We say, you know, entertainment purposes only.
Yeah.
Don't dupe us.
If you got into Rainmakers because of Travis Petty, let us know in the chat. Let us know in the comments section after that. This is all his fault for leading you there. There you go, Petty. There is your drama. We got Nelson in the chat, also a former guest on Lulz. Every single time I log on to x.com, it's either one, a highlight of Greg Dortch, or two, Nelson posting a screenshot of him winning tens and tens of thousands of dollars playing DFS golf. Is anyone sun running hotter than this dude right now?
Yeah, he likes money.
He does.
There are some people who are probably losing quite a bit of money, so we obviously feel bad for those. Not to make light of what might happen to some of these guys. DraftKings says they're going to give a cash payment in their statement. I saw.
Yeah.
I hope it's something fair. but I don't know how they're going to pull this off, because they like promised like 5 million in PGA and tournaments and stuff going forward.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to factor in all this stuff.
Yeah. And that's kind of always been the thing with all of these NFT projects, right? Like, so much of what is kind of sold is kind of this future utility element, you know, or like what's going to come, or like, this is going to get you access to these experiences or events or whatever. And then they are abruptly shut down, and a lot of those promises kind of go to the wayside. I'll just kind of give some of the high level bullets here. I just pulled up an article. The DraftKings kills fantasy sports NFT business amid a class action lawsuit that's taking place in the Massachusetts federal court, which is, of course, where DraftKings is based. It does seem like, Brian, this is just completely centered around this lawsuit where they said it is not worth it for us to fight this in court. The money just does not make sense for us to go to battle here.
Yeah, which that's a ton of money that they're going to be paying out. So they must have really been behind the eight ball with this ruling.
Yeah. Talk about that. They are wanting to make people whole, but it is kind of not necessarily clear exactly how that's going to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, how does a dollar for dollar work too? I haven't done enough Rainmakers to know, but it's like Top Shot, kind of part of it, right? Where you can list and sell your cards and get what the market value is. So like, how will they know what the market value is? People, and then there's like legendary cards, same with Top Shot, you know, like the Cosmics, there's like more expensive cards. Yeah, there's cards that aren't really worth my. I have no idea what my cards were, probably not worth much. I mentioned this to some of the guys at Endgame yesterday when we were talking about this. They gave away a lot of promos too for Rainmakers, but like people don't know this. A lot of people don't know this. Some people know this, but when they give away stuff on DraftKings, they write it off. So like if you win, they subtract that, like that they add that on your taxes. So like, it's not like free, totally free that they're giving us these bonuses and stuff. They throw it on the taxes. So like, they've thrown this on taxes over the years. And then now, you know, that now they do this. I don't know. A lot of questionable shit going on with this one.
Yeah. It says across several sports, DraftKings notched $280 million in total sales, including secondary market trades, according to the Crypto Slam data. As NFL season kicked off last September, the project notched its best month, $21 million in total sales, just as recent as last September. Is kind of crazy. And then this is the saddest into a story. While DraftKings NFTs could sometimes fetch thousands of dollars on its secondary marketplace, a top sale of $70,000 took place 3 years ago. A majority went for small amounts of change. That includes what could be the project's last transaction when a Rainmakers NFT sold Tuesday for $0.33. Can you imagine that? I mean, that would be, is, I bet we could we find that person? Who is the person who purchased the last Rainmakers NFT for 33 cents?
Oh, I'm sure people know who it is. I don't know who it is, but
yeah,
I'm sure we could find out. That's I can't imagine that's still worth 70K.
Yeah. It does brutal. Nolan in the chat says he had around 10,000 in. It hurts, but I know multiple people with six figures. And I know too, like some of those guys, because I remember listening, I think it was Brandon Adams, I know Bales, I'm pretty sure Cal Spears, I think it was, a lot of them said it was kind of like a pay to play thing. Like if you had the capital to like build up your whatever, your library or your inventory of cards, like you could go out and win some pretty big money that first year when they had all the overlays, all the giveaways, yada, yada. But you had to pony up some big cash to be able to play in that sandbox. And then I wonder how many of those guys had gotten out, how many of them were still trying to ride this wave. Not a good situation.
Allegedly, through the rumor mill, there are a couple people with over a million in Rainmakers. What securities, I guess you call them now. Rainmakers NFTs. So, ouch.
Yeah. It's, I guess it's like, you know, from DraftKings standpoint, you know, they're clearly taking, you know, a gamble on trying to capitalize on this NFT trend when they spin it up, yada, yada. But from the user standpoint, do you think a user assumes a similar amount of risk? I feel like in my heart of hearts, when I know like I'm buying Top Shots and stuff, that there's a chance it all blows up and goes to zero. Like, I'm not thinking of it as a safe investment, but the fact that DraftKings was behind it, I think probably gave people like the veneer of like, oh, this is an institution. This isn't some random code that some dude spun up and he can just rug pull me. It's like DraftKings isn't going to rug pull me, right?
That's certainly part of it. I do think, though, even with Top Shot, though, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know if you – were you really expecting a rug pull? Like, just like, we're gone.
Right.
It's over. That's still – I think I don't think the majority – I think a lot of the people who bought wouldn't have bought if they legitimately thought there was a company rug – complete company rug pull at Top Shot or DraftKings.
Yeah.
But like, what was the OpenSea, you know, stuff like that? Yeah. Yeah. You got to expect it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's yeah. Cause you just assume that there's going to be some kind of safety net here. Aaron says the problem is no one is buying the card and the value of the NFT itself. We bought them as effective entry fees to massive contests that are no longer running.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. What would you do if you're DraftKings? Would you, because in my head, I'm going to see them. They're going to get lawyers in a room, go, how much is it going to cost us to settle lawsuits? How much is it? And then they'll come up with a number that's like optimal for paying out, you know, the bare minimum or whatever. That's how right. I see it in my head. But like, couldn't they also just like go overboard and be generous and just pay everyone like whatever, some sort of fair market value or over slightly over fair market value would be.
Yeah.
What would you do if you were them?
I guess I just have no concept of like how in the hole are they on this? How much of this powder that they had made from these sales had they set aside? Like, you know, DraftKings strikes me as a very sharp business minded company. Did they have like a rainy day emergency fund for that? Like when you're planning out this project, like this kind of thing happening has to be part of the possibilities that you think could happen, right? The legal shutdown. Like you have to know that there's this legal gray area. Any NFT operator, I think, understands that. So I guess the question is, were they prepared for this, or does this actually put them behind the eight ball financially if they do make everyone whole? I guess I'm trying to figure out the PR element versus the cash element for them.
Right. Right. Yeah. Of course, you'd have to know more details because, you know, it's easy to just say, no, just pay them extra and then everyone will be happy. But like maybe like they can't like legitimately pull that off.
Yeah.
No, I think I'm not saying I think what DraftKings is going to do is what I said is they're going to find some number with lawyers and accountants and then just go with it. But I was asking Pete, like, what would he do? If he could pull the strings for a day.
Yeah. Dan says pay out whatever face value of the cards in cash and then any markup gain in DK promos monies that can be played on DK.
Yeah, I would say that's more than fair. I don't think they'll go that high.
Yeah. Maybe they have a few truffle hunting trips still laying around. They could kind of smooth things over, handing those out.
Oh man. Yeah. 1.2 million or a truffle hunting trip.
Yeah.
Maybe if Shady Advice is one of the, you know, $1 million bag holders, he might go for that, but I don't know about anyone else.
Yeah, man. It is that's brutal. I mean, we've seen so many of those companies that went, it was like the classic thing, like, let's move quick, let's spin up these companies, let's take advantage of this new gold rush, and then interest peters out and legal stuff, and then it's like you're left sitting there not knowing what to do. I am not envious of the decisions they're having to make right now behind closed doors.
No, and like, you know everyone's saying in chat fair value. I mean, I agree with you, but also like, what is fair value when it's a marketplace card? Like they can come up with a number for them. They're like, no, this is the fair value. And then the customers are gonna be like, hell no, that's not fair.
Yeah. Petty says, I don't think it's that difficult for pre-2024 cards and NFL 2024 cards. That the stuff that's in season is the difficult stuff to value. I guess I'm just not as familiar with the Rainmaker value dynamics to even understand what that distinction is.
I mean, I hope everyone gets fair value. I just, my guess would be that's, you're going to get like 70 cents in the dollar or something.
Yeah. Do you think there is any just other, I don't know, whether it's a PR hit or people being like, I'm not playing on DraftKings anymore because of this happened. Cause that's really what they're trying to prevent. It's like, they need to give just enough that people aren't just like saying the rug pull stuff, mass right. exodus. I'm not ever giving DraftKings another cent.
That's why I was asking you what you would do. Cause like, I could see then you just go overboard, you know, generous in your payouts. And then maybe it goes away.
Yep. Yeah. And then I mean, Nez talking about the Schiller should feel same. It's hard because like, you know, someone who's excited about the marketplace, they're trusting the DraftKings infrastructure too. Like I'm trying to be charitable in that they have no reason to believe that DraftKings is going to rug this. I mean, they have one of their founders, Matt Kalish and Gary Vee, they're doing podcasts. They were putting significant weight and resources behind this. It's clear they wanted it to work.
Right, right. This was not an intentional rug pull. I'm struggling to think of like who was a Rainmaker shill, but like, you know, when it works out, you know, like Bitcoin, you know, you're not a shill, you got a million followers. And if Bitcoin didn't work out, then everyone who was preaching Bitcoin was a shill. So like it could have, Smith, but I think he wasn't a shill. I think he liked it. I think he was kind of done with clearly he retired, right? I think he was kind of done with DFS and this was like a new thing where he could like promote it to his audience because it's pretty close to what he was promoting before and it's new for him and something he might be able to win at.
Yeah.
And you got to get in early on this type of stuff, right? I mean, I know it turned out the dice roll was they crapped out. But like it could have been a good product.
Well, it was like me with I started making the Top Shot stuff right away. Like you can go check the chain on all of it. I'm left holding the bag on everything. I didn't dump on any sale I made. I put right back into the platform. To me, it was like, oh, this fun new thing that you could build content out of. Like, hey, this is this thing to talk about. So, you know, I guess you can go check the chain. If someone was pumping and then dumping all of their moments, that's the issue. But if someone is just really excited about it and continues to play on the platform, like I see no issue with that.
Exactly. Good point. Go check, see what Smiz's sales were. I mean, I could see conspiracy theory going here. It's like, wow, Smiz retired right before this decision and sold all his Rainmakers cards.
Oh my God.
Yeah. My guess is he just thought it was cool. It worked for his audience because he was bored of DFS and just got into it for a little bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, if he was pumping cards and then selling them, someone would have called him out on that by now.
Yeah. Shady says, don't ask Petty how many RM cards he still has. Petty, how many RM cards do you still have?
Well, or just dollar amount. What do you think he's got? Like 100,000?
Yeah. I mean, like I know some of those collections that those guys had were, $300,000, $400,000, $500,000, $600,000 collections. Yeah. I want to say I heard
more.
Did they have the live final too? Wasn't that down in New Orleans? They had a Rainmakers live final. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
I think they
do. Do you think, well, I guess this is another question for Petty. I guess we should have just had Petty on if we're doing the Rainmakers thing, but like, do you think they reached out to some of their whales ahead of time? Do you think there is going to be different compensation packages for them relative to a blanket thing to all users, or will they just make it at some percentage based things that eliminates any like whale bias?
I don't think they reached out to them early. That's my guess. I don't know, but pretty sure I've heard through the grapevine that they did reach out afterwards to some of the big bag holders, and they're waiting on what that offer is to decide if they're going to sue.
Yep.
That's the rumor.
I popped into the DraftKings Discord right after the news broke because I had a curiosity to see what the chatter would be like. And there were lots of people threatening to organize lawsuits was a lot of the chatter in there immediately following.
The problem is, well, when we got rug pulled on a poker site years ago, back when I used to play poker, I can't remember the name of it. Anyways, and like through like 2+2, we all found each other, like who had money on there. I had like 15K or something. And like the class action lawsuit like wasn't worth it, or the someone had like a couple hundred thousand on there and they needed to do it themselves. So like they needed to sue themselves. So like that was kind of like, so like it always, it kind of fell apart. Like, I think we got it like one lawyer for a little bit and it fell apart. So, cause like it didn't make sense. So like a class action lawsuit, like, you know, like these class action lawsuits, you get sent in the mail and it's like, collect your $1.72
yes.
from Motorola, you know, for the thing you bought 15 years ago. It's like, yeah, yeah. I'm not going to fill that in because the lawyers make all the money. So like if you're owed 500 grand or $1 million, and let's say you're owed $1 million and they offer you 300,000. Like signing a class action lawsuit is probably a mistake. You should probably get your own lawyer and see how much right. you can.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, I wonder if like from DraftKings perspective, again, going back to, you know, how much money they're going to end up losing on this. Like I bet like if they could just make everyone whole and this entire operation is just like net zero for them, like didn't cost them money, didn't make them money, and they can just like wipe it all away and everyone, like I think they would do that, right? They would snap their fingers and just have it go away like it never happened. The question is that possible financially?
Right. I think that's what I would try to do if they could pull it off. But you know, these corporations, this is a big company now. There's probably an accountant. There's probably lawyers like, no. Here's how much we can pay.
I wonder too, how much, you know, like what happened with Top Shot and Dapper Labs. Like they had multiple rounds of layoffs, right? Because they, you know, they had gotten so fat during that span when they were growing, and then the bear market hit and they had hired so many people and they were just cutting and cutting and cutting, you know, fat from their employee base. Like I wonder, like DraftKings had to have had a good grip of NFT specific engineers for this, right?
You'd think so. That yeah. I mean that market really bottomed out fast.
Yeah.
Because I have two minds on this, because you saw this all over Twitter too. Is like, hey, give them credit for trying something new, right? Think of, you know, they're at least they're being ambitious or something. And so like, I do agree with that. And it just really did not work out at all. Like even after like forgetting this lawsuit, right? Like it hasn't really been that pretty, I don't think. But that ambition only goes so far, right? Like at a certain point you have to get, you know, you can't be like, you start something new and then rob $10 million from people and they go, hey, well, I was just trying to be ambitious here. You know what I mean? I was just trying to come up with something new. So I'm sorry, you all lost $10 billion, but I was trying something new. So like that only works for like, I agree. Like they were trying something new, but we're talking millions and millions of dollars, possibly getting people getting screwed.
Well, yeah, exactly. Trying something new is saying we are going to give every existing DraftKings, you know, DFS player, sports bettor, you know, 50 cards to go play in these free roll contests for a year for us to figure out kind of like the game mechanics of it. Like that's trying something new. It's like if you're, you know, taking hundreds of millions of dollars in secondary sales fees, that's not trying something new. That's capitalizing on a new business opportunity. Yeah.
I think they probably went too hard. I think it would have been cooler to like you get a NFT if you win a GPP of like 10,000 or more, and they're like rare, and it's like hard to get. you know, or whatever, you know, like this pick six seems pretty cool. It just got launched in Illinois. It's like the underdog ones, except you're in a pool of player, like a pool of 1,000 people or something. So it's more DFS like, but anyways, like yeah. Those, you know, you could have cards in those, you know, somehow. I know it's probably like all illegal for them to do it now after this lawsuit, but I think they could have done something cool with NFTs on a smaller scale instead of being so ambitious, like everyone's giving them credit for. But yeah, I mean, just the point being, like, there's a line. Like, if they were ambitious and like somebody lost $200 and they cancel it, like, you gotta, you know, applaud them for trying something new. But we're talking many, many millions here.
Yeah. Yeah, not a good situation. And they're now, I feel like we're almost out of examples too of like, has there been any NFT related, you know, sports project that, you know, is still kind of holding on or still has any relevance? I mean, it just seems like everything has gotten wiped out to a degree.
Not that I'm aware, but I don't even pay attention anymore.
Yeah. Well, if there was something that had withstood the test of time, it would be on our radar more for sure.
Well, that's true. Yeah. But this is, it's also like when no one's paying attention, might be a good time to get, I still think something will end up being like the collectible, you know, the collectible 20 years from now.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's disagreeing that it was fun. I mean, I think they were close to hitting all of the right notes. You know, they were able to attract the whales because there was legitimate money-making opportunities. It was a new game type that even a lot of, you know, smaller bankroll players seemed to enjoy playing. And it seemed like it had the game mechanics that were just complicated enough to kind of feel fun and new, but maybe not too esoteric to keep everyone out. Like, they seemed like they were close to cracking the egg, or whatever, cracking the nut to make that interesting. It just, when you're backed on NFT and reliant on that kind of overall market, like what we've even talked about, like Bitcoin, right? Like, everything is so tethered to just like the overall NFT market and interest in that. And when things are booming, it's booming everywhere. And when it bottoms out, then it's like, wait, why am I holding these cards? Why am I not just playing regular DFS?
Yeah. Could, like, it's hard enough to win. Now I got to like figure out the value of these cards over time. And yeah,
that's a good one. So Rare is probably the one that is the exception that I'm forgetting.
Yeah. Cause they're overseas, right?
Yeah. Well, they have their MBA, but yeah, I think they're based overseas. They have a marketing arm in the States now, but yeah, they seem to crack the game mechanics, at least with their soccer game that people are obsessed with.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. The France, Ludog says. So
yeah,
maybe they're not subject to the same rules, but they could get screwed. You might want to sell your, not financial advice, but you might want to sell your NBA So Rares with this ruling, or at least look into how they're affected by this.
Yeah, that's a good,
maybe
note.
They'll back out of the US market and you're just left holding bags.
Although in that case, would you, if they back out of the US market, I mean, would you still be able to just sell yours on an exchange to European users?
Yeah, I suppose, but I imagine that would tank an NBA, the American sport.
That's true. Just the entire market.
Big market's gone. You probably lose like at least half your money.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's rough. But what if DraftKings goes with that angle? It's like, yeah, well, the value is zero because no one wants to buy it, right? So we're going to pay you zero. It's a security that's worth nothing. So
yeah. I would need to see a show where there's like a DraftKings judge in a robe with a gavel, and each Rainmakers user, you know, has to approach him at the stand, and, you know, it's like trying to barter for what his payout is going to be.
Can you imagine like that with your lawyer? Like trying to explain all this to your lawyer. Then your lawyer wrapping their head around it so they can make a case. And then the lawyer has to explain it to a judge enough so they understand it, you know, to rule in your favor.
Well, the other thing about the trying new stuff, that you can't extend that charitable of a read on it is because it wasn't just Rainmakers, right? They spun up the PFP collections, all of the cash grab sports NFTs, all of that stuff. Like, this wasn't just like, let's try a new game type. It was, let's capitalize on the NFP, you know, sports NFTs, profile pictures. Like, they were going for all of it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Another word for ambition there could be called greed. Certainly. I bought some of those too. Oh my God. What were we thinking, Pete?
I do not know. But we're going to take a hard left turn here and bring on our guest today. Welcoming to the stage, it is Dean Sizen. Is that how you pronounce it? Sizen?
You actually got it right. Most people get it wrong. So thank you for that.
Do you know that that is a term Pete uses instead of the word season?
My last name is in Pete's vocabulary already. I like that.
Yeah, let me do a new intro. It's Sizen, folks, here on Lulz. So Dean is friends with my buddy Michael Dubner, who some of you guys know from the content space, does great stuff at RotoViz. We collaborate on videos over on the Deposit Kingdom channel. And he mentioned this project you were working on, Profit X, that you're going to tell us a little bit about. And I thought it would be a cool combo for Lulz, because what you guys are building is kind of at the intersection of some of these, you know, ideas that we talk about on Lulz and kind of what the future of the fantasy and sports betting space could be. So why don't you tell people right off the rip what Profit X is?
Yeah, it's a betting exchange operating in the sweepstakes vertical. And I'll explain what all that means, but I'll take you through a bit of history. We were initially in the UK about 5 years ago, operating a betting exchange model, learned a lot out there, came back to the US once PASPA was repealed in a few states. Also, they got their feet underneath them regulation-wise. We made the move to New Jersey under the brand Profit Exchange, which is a betting exchange. It is a peer-to-peer betting marketplace, is the best way to think of it. It is very similar to DFS in that DFS is all peer-to-peer pool betting, essentially, but this is more one-to-one. And I'll go a little deeper into that about what the user experience looks like. So we were in New Jersey for a while. We pulled out of the regulated market recently, the gaming regulated market, and now we are operating under the sweepstakes vertical. The same premise applies. It is a betting exchange. People can bet against one another. You get much better pricing versus a sports book. You can get down as much action as you'd like. You can request your own price. You can trade in and out of positions a lot more easily. So that is, in a nutshell, a little bit of the history. I think the context is important, but what we are working on is a national betting exchange, the first of its kind.
National, so just more states, essentially.
We will be in 41 states. Yeah.
And so you guys, it's basically the same product that it was, but just because of kind of those legal stuff, it was easier for you guys to scale under, what did you call it, the sweepstakes category?
Yeah, I won't say it was the same product or is the same product. It solves the same pain points. Right. So the pain points we solve are, you know, what we like to say is price, liquidity, simplicity. So instead of betting a minus 110 on a spread at a sports book, you can bet at minus 101, minus 102 on an exchange, because you remove that sports book, that middleman, that very expensive middleman. Mm-hmm. So we're solving the same pain points. It is a little different. There is a free to play side of our app. There is no purchase necessary to play, which is a sweepstakes requirement. There are certain rules about alternative method of entries to play. There's a lot of small things that only apply to sweepstakes and that don't make you a gaming company, but we are still solving those same pain points.
So I'm a little confused. So a betting exchange I'm familiar with, most of our listeners are too, but just in case people aren't, like, I could go and put a line up and someone could match it, essentially. So, like, you know, you could, bears I don't know what the spread is tonight. Bears plus 3 or whatever, and then someone can take minus 3 the other side if they want.
Exactly.
Right. And sweepstakes, is there any difference there?
Not in that example, no.
Okay.
You will still be able to do that. That is how you're familiar with betting exchanges. Have you used them before?
I don't think there's been a legal one here.
Where are you located?
Illinois.
You're in Illinois. We will be in Illinois. Okay. So you'll be able to use us. But yes, that is the core principle of it. It's people trading against one another, plus 3, -3, -102, +102.
And then what is how do you guys make your money on that? If there's no VIG there, what's in it for you guys to provide to match make these bets?
Yeah, we're taking a cut of the volume that comes across. So it's, you know, functions like a commission, but only on winning positions in the market that you're betting on. So if you place $100 on the Bears plus 3 and you win, we would take a commission out of that. If you lose, we don't take anything.
And I know there's been some ideas like this in the crypto space as well. And it seems like one of the big issues is always just kind of liquidity. You know, yeah. Is there enough, like if you post a bet, you know, how do you guys deal with that as you are starting out trying to get users?
Yeah, great question. It's a classic marketplace problem, right? So like crypto, I mean, hell, you can look at Uber and Lyft is what I like to point to. If there were no drivers, there would be no riders, right? So the way we solve that is we have contracts with service providers who are providing liquidity to our site and making recommendations for us. So when you come on to ProfitX on day one, you will see a ton of bets, a ton of markets flooded with $5,000, $10,000, sometimes $50,000 available to bet into a side because of these contracts that we have. It functions very similarly to like a financial exchange, right? And I don't love the financial exchange analogy because it's a little more intense, but it's very similar to like how a Citadel will price Apple stock, right? So people can go buy it. So that's when you come on day one. You know, Brian, if you want Bears plus 3, you'll likely, I should say very, very likely be able to get matched right off the bat because of these suppliers that we're working with.
Suppliers, do you mean like pros?
Professional it could better? It could be a pro. It could be an institution. This is a very popular model overseas. So there are full-blown institutions that do this. It could be Joe Schmo sitting at the bar who says, I'll request this price and see if anyone fills it.
So exchanges are pretty awesome. I do have some criticisms, or not criticisms, but theories on how it can go that might sound like a criticism anyways. Because in poker, I used to play poker for a living before DFS. Yeah. The head-to-head lobby, which is similar to a betting exchange, would eventually get filled by like just the best few players, and like no one would play them. And so, although bet exchanges can be used for multiple things, that's kind of a concern I have is like, you know, a sports book is going to put up so many lines that some of them are shitty. Some of them are going to be bad. But when you got Rufus and a whole bunch of other pros just putting stud lines up there, anyone who's a recreational guy who's going to go up there, the VIG's gone. So that's a huge plus. Like they're probably better anyways using an exchange. Don't get me wrong, but like the experience might not be this utopia that a lot of people are saying. It's like, oh, once we can play this, once we have this, head to head version of sports betting, you know, then we won't have all sorts of these problems. So do you have any thoughts on that? And I actually have a couple ideas I want to throw at you after you respond.
Yeah, please. I love your experience with this stuff. Yeah, that's a common issue with exchanges. If you cater it too much to just the sharpest of the sharp clientele, you'll just get a classic adverse selection problem. Like if you compared our exchange prices to a sports book, let's say, you know, a sports book has -110, -110 on each side, and we have like -115, +110. Well, sure, that's a lot less VIG. but one side is clearly worse than the other, right? So you can almost identify the adverse selection. If it's that consistent across the board, like if every spread is -115 plus 110, you're probably dealing with an adverse selection issue, or the service provider that is providing those prices for us needs to tip their book and get some action on the other side, which is probably way less likely. So what we're always checking is, do we have the better price on both sides? 85, 90% of the time we do. And if that's the case, you don't deal with the adverse selection problem that you would in a poker room. You'd be getting the best price on either side. So no matter what side you want to take, you'd be better off using us versus the sportsbook. That's what I'm always watching out for.
That's a good point. I'm more like maybe nitpicking here about the idea of like, this is peer to peer, you know, I'm talking about what people talk in this industry broadly about betting exchanges and why it's so good. It's a peer to peer experience. Like, you know, you can beat some, which it is. And that's great. So like one idea I would do, and I advocate for this on DFS too, is maybe pools and then randomizing entries. Cause like the idea of like a peer to peer would be like, hey, I could go on there and play against Pete, you know, a guy like Pete or some other, you know, guy who's just wants to bet the Bears.
Why are you so excited to go play against me on here, Brian?
Or me. It's not like I'm a pro sports bettor either. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of the idea of like, oh, peer to peer could be anyone, you know, which most people don't realize. That's probably not who's going to be posting these lines. The posting lines are going to be someone who's really, really sharp. But if you put it in a pool and then I got a chance of being matched up with Pete or me or, you know, someone like me, and also I have a chance of being matched up with Pete. Now, obviously, like, you have liquidity concerns and stuff like that. Maybe might be like a long-term idea, you know, or, you know, in poker, I think eventually they started limiting the amount of rooms they could post.
Yeah.
You know, and at a certain level. I don't know how realistic any of these ideas are, but like, yeah.
I think so. What we do with our service providers is we contractually obligate them to post both sides at a margin that's much tighter than the sportsbook would. If you think about it, like these institutions, they probably have very similar prices to a sportsbook, but they don't have nearly as much overhead. They don't have any marketing costs. They don't pay nearly as much taxes. So they can price -102, -103, -102, -103, as opposed to -110, -110, and make money. It's a high volume, low margin business. As soon as we see like the poker example, like a limited amount of rooms, as soon as we see like a market maker just laying one side or tipping it to one side consistently, or I should say a service provider, then at that point, like, that is a concern, and that's where you need to like limit them or possibly even kick them out, because it doesn't help the exchange at all. It just creates a very toxic environment where people are led essentially to slaughter to the adverse selection problem. I love how you bring this up, because it's a very advanced concept that not a lot of people think about when they think about a betting exchange. But because you guys are DFS guys, I understand why we just dove right into the peer-to-peer problem. On the randomizer, I don't know how difficult of a piece of technology that would be to randomly match you up against Peter every time so you can kick his ass. But
more just like, because this is how I want DFS to change. So like the cash games in DFS are drying up and they're closer to head-to-head. Sometimes they're going to be 4 or 5 or 10. And the reason is because they go in, they see like a popular name who everyone knows is good, and they're like, why would I play in this? Right. But if you just had a pool like Zoom Poker, the Zoom Poker model, and you might get matched up with somebody who's a pro, or you might get matched up with some of the recreational players. It's like they're more likely to join into that. I don't know how you can do this on a betting exchange. Honestly, the more I think about it, it's probably not even feasible. But that is just the peer to peer idea is awesome. It really is. And I bet it could be a great marketing tool. I just foresee it just being, it's going to be the studs posting all these lines. And you know what? If it's just used as a low vig book, that's still like a win big time that you can't get that you can't get banned or limited from. I'm assuming you don't ban or limit recreational players or regular players.
Never.
Yeah, so that's still a huge win. But this right. is always something I think about when I hear the betting exchange talk is oh, it's going to be peer to peer and it's going to be great. And it's like, yeah, you're not going to be betting against your neighbor. Like, you know what I mean? It'd be awesome if you could, though.
The something that we're trying to popularize is like the requesting feature. So instead of just having these professional service providers providing action to the site, like, you know, the Mies of the world come in and say, I want $1,000 on the Bears +3 and I want it at -101 or I want it at even odds, right? That's where it really becomes fruitful and where it's beneficial for everyone. What we saw in New Jersey on our old product is 30% of request volume between 15 and 30% a month came in from just people. Just individuals, not necessarily the sharpest of the world. Their average ROI was like less than 1%. So we were onto something, but at scale, we need to make sure that that stays the same.
What kind of options do you have like on the menu? Like if I, you know, I saw my buddy Davis trying to book side action yesterday on Justin Fields starting week 1 at +400. Could I go on the exchange and post that, or are there certain kind of templates of like, no, it has to be the spread for a major game?
No, the we have a lot of flexibility. So we have the ability to create any custom market really you want, as long as we can settle it with like a rule.
Right.
You know, I don't know if we'll be able to put up the weather, but for something like Justin Fields starting week 1, 100%. That's probably not a market that like we would think to put up, because like put yourself in my shoes, like we're trying to figure out where the demand is. But if you write to us or tweet to us and say, hey, I want to house this market, we would put it up. You would go deposit and then place your offer and see who accepts it. It could be one people, a person, it could be 100 people.
But the user experience will be more like I go and like there's a drop down of like here's all the spread for the games this week, or all the games happening. And then I'm just wondering like how, like, is it like, you can just pick between creating a spread number or an over under, and those are like my two options, or are you able to have more like free form? I want to submit this as a potential bet.
You would submit it. Like you would write into us the way that this would work for like a very niche market like this. We would then put it up on the site and then it would be under the menu of like Steelers, Ravens, or just gotcha. Steelers. Like it's Steelers, Justin Fields to start week 1. It would be like any other prop.
Gotcha.
I'm kind of curious on like your marketing. So are you marketing to like recreational people? Like how are you going to get, because you have the institutional people, but then who's on the other side, right?
Yeah. This only goes as far as recreational customers, right? By no means do we want to build something just for sharp people. Like I always say, we want everyone on the betting spectrum under one roof, and we could be the only platform to do that. Sportsbooks can't have sharp people, and exchanges can't have too many sharp people. So we have to strike the right balance. How we're marketing it to them, it's all in the platform, right? Like when someone hits the site, they need to understand what it is in 30 seconds. Otherwise they're going to leave. It's a game of learnability versus benefit at the end of the day. So if I can learn what the benefit is within 30 seconds of the site, I'm probably going to try to figure out how to place my bet. So when you go on ProfitX, it looks and it feels like a sports book. But with those exchange features, you can change the odds. You can see all the prices are much tighter. You're going to see like 8-cent spreads most typically, as opposed to 20 to 30 cent spreads. You'll see a little dollar amount under the odds. And people normally say like, what the hell does that mean? So it looks and feels like a rec sports book, but has the features of the exchange. That is the key marketing right there. It's all done right there. And the second thing I always say is, we need to build a philosophy. like it needs to be cool to either win more money or save more money when you're betting on sports. It can't be like the cool thing to build a 20 leg parlay and try to buy a new house, right? Like that's how the sports books get you. That shit is literally never going to work. You are always going to lose money doing that over time. So, yeah, that's why I like talking to guys like you who understand the landscape and understand the benefit of this and try to bring that philosophy out into the masses.
Have you heard of Rainmakers? And would you I'm kidding.
I have.
Did you guys see that? This is a side note. Did you guys see that someone tweeted out DraftKings offered this parlay, but it was just in like it was either gold medal winners or some championship winners. So it was like completely uncorrelated. So they're like, they're like marketing like the worst possible. The correlated parlays. Anthony says here in chat, guess is no. But are you thinking about, and I'll add on, DraftKings has pools. They also had a sports betting championship that was similar to this, to pools. And they have like pick six, which is kind of like DFS sports betting. Yeah, Underdog has a pick three through six or whatever, too. Are you thinking about any of that type of stuff?
I will say we need to walk before we run. So I think anything under the peer-to-peer umbrella is a possibility. That being said, I think there is a real opportunity in the market for this specifically to scale pretty quickly. So we would like to push that vision. But then once we have a mass, then we could start looking at parimutuel pools. We could start looking at Pick'em, any other peer-to-peer game, because we have most of the peer-to-peer technology already.
You mentioned when Brian was talking about the Illinois and like the sweepstakes stuff, you said in that example with like the Chicago Bears one that nothing would be different. What would have been different, or in what ways is the experience different under that new setup you were referring to?
There's a free-to-play side of it. So you can just play for points. You can compete on leaderboards. I'll say we're working a lot on gamifying that side of things. So like, if you don't want to play for real money, you can. If you don't know how to use an exchange, you can learn on the free-to-play side. And then there's no purchase necessary to play in the sweepstakes. So you could get a free entry, aka, you know, the sweepstakes is the betting exchange. You can get a free entry into the betting exchange, which is a free $2 bet every day. So those are the, like, I'll say the two most crucial parts that are different that I'll explain. But like outside of that, the real money side of this is the same as, or I should say very similar to that betting exchange experience. You can still request the Bears plus three. Someone still gets filled. It's the same experience.
You pique my interest by saying Illinois will be legal, not just because I can have another book to bet on, but how did you pull off like getting legalized in 41 states, or expect to be legalized in 41 states? Like I've worked at the Capitol here in Illinois, and an industry like anything gambling related, pulling that off, I wouldn't even try to begin. So like, how did you do it?
Yeah. Well, one, we have a very strong legal opinion, but number two is this has been a popular arena for more than a decade. So the sweepstakes space is very familiar with casino models and bingo models and poker models even, and then sportsbook models. But no one's doing the betting exchange. Sports has only taken off in the last year and a half with Fliff is the most popular one out there. But no one has really done it outside of them for sports, probably because the margins are a lot higher in casino. But this model has been going on for 10 plus years, and it's fairly black and white, rock solid. It's different than Pick'em, which is an interpretation of the law. Sweepstakes is a definition of the law, which is the best way I like to explain it. So for those reasons, you know, there are some states that do not allow a sweepstakes platform like this to exist. And there's 9 of them that we're not going into. But for Illinois, green light.
Did you hire a lobbyist?
Not a lobbyist, but a law firm. Yes.
Because there's licensing fees and stuff like that for sports books. Did you guys have any of those obstacles?
No, we did that in New Jersey under our gaming regulated product. But since this has a few key features and key guidelines we have to follow, we wouldn't be classified as a gaming company. We'd be classified as a sweepstakes company.
That's pretty sweet.
It's cool. I mean, listen, we tried the regulated route and doing that, and it was tough. I think they've done a very good job of building up their business, the regulated model in New Jersey. I mean, they're like the golden child of the regulated model. But for startups like us, like it was really tough. There's a lot of taxes. There's a lot of fees. There's partnership deals that you have to enter into, which are very expensive. So we just never were able to make a ton of money. And if you can't make a ton of money as a startup, you can't survive. Right. So our main goal as a company is to popularize and make the betting exchange model mainstream. And the sweepstakes arena is the best way to do that in today's day and age. So I wish it took off more quickly and this all, you know, was nice and it worked, but we can only move at one state at a time very slowly. It was pretty tough to get to critical mass. So, you know, just the natural barriers to entry were really tough.
So what was the biggest thing you had to sacrifice from like a tech or product standpoint, making that pivot?
Great question. A few things I will say. I think one thing that we learned is that even though we are a sweepstakes company now, we're not giving up on the know your customer protocols, the anti-money laundering protocols, any internal control protocols with customer funds, any compliance protocols, responsible gaming measures and procedures. Like we still have all of that. And I think it's something that would have been very easy to give up as a sweepstakes company, but we didn't think it was the right thing to do because we want to be legitimate. So that's number one. I think the hardest thing from moving from the regulated side to the sweepstakes side is we basically have 2 apps in one now, right? Like we have a free-to-play app and a sweepstakes app. So you're running you have 2 different databases. You have basically 2 apps in one, which is not easy.
So it's basically, it sounds like if you have like the different prongs of like tech and legal and marketing, it seems like now for you guys, it's marketing is the biggest hurdle, just getting people on the site. Is that true?
Getting people on the site. I think we need to make sure that we have very similar menus to the FanDuels and DraftKings of the world, right? Like you guys are props guys at heart, I'm sure, when you're betting. So, you know, you want to go on your main site and make sure that you have the props that you want to bet on. So yes, it's marketing, but also making sure that we have everything that people can bet on at their disposal, because you know, I think there's 5 reasons why people choose a book, or I should say 3 to 4. There's price, there's product. So how many markets that you have available and whatnot. And then there's promotion. How much free money are these people giving me to stick around? And that product piece is huge, right? It's what can I bet on and when.
Have you received any pushback from any of the other sportsbook companies or anything like behind the scenes?
Not yet. We literally rolled out our beta product yesterday. So if you guys want to check it out, let me know. But we won't be rolling it out to the masses for a little while. We have not received anything from them yet. Realistically, I don't think we'll be an issue for them until we're a lot bigger. think they have a lot bigger problems to deal with. They've got the sweepstakes casinos to deal with, who are actually making more money than their regulated casino products. So I think at some point maybe they might turn attention to this, but they got some other issues. They got also like the Underdogs and Prize Picks of the world stealing all their business, right? Rightfully so, taking a lot of business away from them, and now they're trying to fight that. So I think we'll be okay for a while.
Yeah. Did you guys, what did you bootstrap it? Did you get a lot of investors? How did you pull this off?
It was a journey. I started this with my co-founder shortly out of college. I was working in finance and investment banking for like a year and change. And then we started this. We deemed the US too tough. So that's when we moved to the UK to launch this. It was a lot cheaper. It was a fully regulated market, a very advanced market. So we were able to get licensed, understand about compliance, and then take those skills and come back to the US. And then at that point, we were able to partner with Caesars out here in New Jersey and launch our betting exchange in the regulated gaming market. And across all those years, we had to raise money to do this. We bootstrapped it to start, but we've raised more money than I would have liked to, honestly, to do this. But now where we're at is, you know, main goal is let's get profitable. Let's grow this thing. Let's make it a mainstream product.
What is your VIG or rake or fee or whatever you're calling it? What's the
3%. So it shakes out to like you're saving. It's, you know, if you're betting $110 to win 100, you'd bet $103 to win 100 on a spread. That scales up as the odds are less in your favor. So if you're betting at like 10 to 1, the amount of money that you're saving when you incorporate the VIG is even more. It's like in the 30%, 40% range. But yeah, 3% commission.
Well, I dropped the link earlier in the chat. I will put it in the show notes as well. It looks like if you go to the site now, getprofitx.co, it's just requesting early access.
Yeah, that's how you can get early access to the site. If you're interested in it, just sign up and we'll reach out to you. We're capping it at a certain point. So obviously definitely get it on the wait list. But if it doesn't interest you and you just want to wait and see when it comes to your state and we roll it out to the masses, then it's going to be right around call it football.
Awesome. Well, yeah, we it sounds like a cool concept. I'm excited to check it out. I mean, Brian and I often on the show are just, you know, always hungry for kind of new innovative ways to approach these things and create an ecosystem that's sustainable. Seems like you're on the right track.
I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys having me on too. This was fun.
Yeah, the low VIG is huge. Like in the DFS space, they most people put that out there for casual and recreational people on how important the lines are, but there's still a lot of work that needs to be done. But the more that gets out there, the better you'll do for sure. Cause you guys are going to have the lowest rake.
We're building the philosophy. That's the key. Get people away from buying lottery tickets and get people into much smarter ways of betting.
Before we go, do you got any really embarrassing stories about Dubner from college that you want to air out here as a thank you for him brokering your appearance here?
Oh, I have so many. I don't know how many, I don't know if Dubner would love me sharing some of these stories to the masses, but, we definitely had a lot of fun in school. I will say that. Now we're taking life a little more seriously is what I will say.
Yeah. Although he's still, you know, drafting best ball teams in between surgeries. So I don't know how seriously.
He might be the only DFS surgeon I know.
Well, thank you for coming on. Brian, anything on your end with in-game syndicate that you want to mention?
I was going to say, the Undergame app is good for hand-eye coordination, right, for these surgeons, you know? Endgame, DraftKitty's over there. So the DraftKitty.com or Endgame syndicate, will work over there now. Oh, we just released two best ball game theory videos, Pete.
I'm excited about. I saw that. I bookmarked that to check those out.
Yeah. So we're gonna. We'll keep getting more and more complicated. They're, you know, toy games to start, and see if we could solve some of these questions everyone has about best ball.
Nice. Yeah, excited to check. Are you guys, and then I saw you've been doing the YouTube stuff. Is there anything for audio listeners on that yet, or is that still just YouTube only?
I think it's YouTube only. Yeah, we haven't done audio. Good point. You probably should.
Okay. Yeah, you can whip up another feed there. For me, hopping over to Ship Chasing here in the next 25 minutes to do a draft, and then yeah, I got Best Ball After Dark on Saturday night with John Boy Beats. Thanks again to Dean. This has been Lulz with Pete and Brian. We'll see you guys next time. Peace.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.